This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech. This is going to be episode 392 for Tuesday, May 12th. It's 4 o'clock Tuesday afternoon. Joining me as usual on this tech and ministry podcast for these 392 episodes, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally. How are you?
Good afternoon, Martin. I'm doing very well. How about you?
I'm doing as well as can be expected for a man in my advanced years.
That's good. I'm not taking that bait.
Inside joke. Okay.
Inside joke. Someone on this end of the microphone's having a birthday tomorrow, but I'm living it up. It's the end of an era for me, and I'll be moving on into the next decade. You guys can guess which decade that might be.
Moving on. Yeah, we could run a little poll or survey. That'd be fun.
I told somebody 50 was a new 20. You know, it sure doesn't feel like 50. So
I've heard 60 is the new 50.
Is that right?
I can get along with that. So, okay. Well, happy birthday, podcasting partner. And I haven't known you for all those years, but I've known you for a lot of years now, and even just on this podcast where we kind of meet up every week and talk about two of our favorite topics, technology and ministry, and this show will be no different. Had a chance to visit some wonderful folks out in Boise, Idaho. I maybe have driven through Boise before, but went out there to consult with our Vietnamese mission out there. Many of you probably didn't know we even had a Vietnamese mission, but they've been there for a number of years, and there's a pretty decent sized population of Vietnamese in Boise, Idaho, and we have a pastor there and congregation. I think they worship maybe 60 or 70 a Sunday. And the reason I went out there with one of our co-workers, Paul Prangy, and we talked to them about a digital outreach strategy. So I think as I was thinking about what to do for this show and coming back from my trip to Boise, I thought, well, maybe we could talk about cross-cultural ministry and digital outreach and technology, and came up with a theme for the show of 10 tips for digital outreach in maybe a cross-cultural setting. Although as I was writing down the tips, I think they apply to almost any outreach kind of setting. So I think it'll be applicable to everybody. But and these lists of 10 are pretty popular these days too. So I thought I'd couch it in that.
That sounds great, Martin. It sounds like you're out doing world mission work out there in Idaho. That's pretty amazing.
They are actually a home mission, but I think they're going to kind of cross over to kind of play more of a world mission role, which is great because a lot of our cross-cultural work in the Synod is not just to the people in the immediate area, but back home. So the relatives and acquaintances, family, friends that are back in Vietnam. So it becomes very quickly a global outreach. So kind of a neat thing to watch that, and our culture is becoming so much more cross-cultural. So wherever we look, we're becoming, we have more opportunities for ministry across those cultural lines. So it's exciting stuff. I was excited to be able to go out there. I've been working with our Hmong church out in the Twin Cities as well. So a whole new world for me. And technology really can play a role in those kind of contexts.
And that's just what I was thinking. You know, what a blessing that we live in this day and age where you can reach Vietnam or wherever via the magic of the interwebs. So you got 10 tips for us today. Maybe you want to kick off with number one.
Number one, identify digital content. So when you're dealing with technology, you're usually dealing with something you have to post someplace, whether that's a blog, a video, you know, a Facebook post, whatever. So you have to kind of figure out what your content is. So especially in a cross-cultural setting, you don't have all the English content that's been translated, so you have different resources for that. One of those is our multi-language publications group, which has a lot of that kind of content. And then, of course, the content that you create in your local congregation that is cross-cultural, that is translated, that is in the native tongue. So I always recommend to people, regardless of whether it's cross-cultural or not, is create a and this will come up in a later tip, kind of a content spreadsheet, a content inventory of sorts. So you can look at everything that you produce that could be put out on the internet in whatever form, whether it's your website, Facebook, Twitter, you know, whatever it is, and just kind of do a quick inventory and kind of take a look at it, prioritize it, and then see where your gaps are. So that would probably be where I would start in any kind of digital outreach. What do I have to share online?
I think some people might be surprised. I don't know if you talked about this, but we produce a lot of content in our day-to-day ministry efforts. Yep. And a lot of people don't think of it as things that are web ready or web appropriate or whatever, but yet much of it is. So, you know, your typical congregation maybe is still doing the paper newsletter, mailing them out to members or putting them in member mailboxes at church or whatever the case right. may be. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it maybe as a once a month thing, but it's full of articles. It's full of articles that could be used individually. It's also certainly could be digitized and delivered in digital.
Yep. You have devotions, you have prayers, you have articles. You have stuff that could be captured and made digital. So you have obviously the sermon or service, but you also have Bible studies and children's sermons, and you mm-hmm. know, the list goes on that could be turned into digital content. So once you start writing this stuff down and kind of taking the inventory, then you kind of see all the stuff that's at your disposal. Then you kind of have to figure out who the audience is, how to get it in a web-ready format or some kind of other delivery mechanism format. So identify digital content, number one. Number two, pick one priority at a time. That really came through when I was talking to the ministry team there in Idaho. They have a small group and they can't do everything. So we had a whiteboard full of things that they could do. There were probably 20 things that they could do. And really, kind of, I could see kind of a deer in the headlights kind of look when they looked at everything that they could do and say, well, how are we going to do all this? And the point is, you don't have to do all of it. Pick what's most important and then do one at a time. Because very often that's all that you can do, even if maybe even you can't do that. So there's a realization that, hey, let's just pick it one at a time, get that baked in, get some excitement around it, and then go on to the next one. That's why you need this kind of a strategic plan. You need an approach. You need to kind of phase this thing out, say, well, this is going to happen in year one. I'm going to take it to the next level in year two. And then maybe in year three, once that's grounded and kind of running on its own, we're going to try something else. So it's really important to just identify those things that are high priority based on your objectives.
And maybe you just kind of answered what question had popped into my mind, Martin, but how do you go about determining high priority? Obviously, prior to this, maybe they had some objectives they wanted to yep. achieve and they fit it into that. It just seems like there's so many directions that you could go that would be high priority.
Yeah, the way we planned, the way Paul and I worked the strategic planning session there is we tried to get them to look into the future and identify where they'd like to be in 3 years or 5 years. So that would immediately begins to set objectives. So if you one of your objectives is to grow your local congregation, then that would suggest different kinds of priorities versus reaching out in a more global fashion. So set it, what do you want to look like in 3 years? What things should be different in 5 years than they are today? Then you set your priorities based on how to get from here to there. That kind of led into number three for them and for us too. Can you do more or do different? So I asked the group there as an example, With all the stuff that you do, can you do more? You're already doing a lot. You're already maxing out your coworker and your lay leaders. Is it possible to do more? And if the answer is no, then you kind of have to ask a different question. Well, should we stop doing something to do this? So there's a kind of a balance. Or should we be doing something differently to allow us to do more? So there's always that planning process. The good news about technology is it sometimes allows you to do things differently, saving you time, saving you energy, so that you can do more because of the advances in technology.
Yeah, I could definitely see where that's true. Sometimes it's maybe a little uncomfortable or challenging to set up technology solutions, but once they're in place, it's almost like fix it and forget it. It does simplify your efforts and things. So I could definitely see where that could be the case.
Yeah. If there's good planning and good thoughtfulness in going into the process, yeah. Number four, this is one of the, I think this is going to be one of their priorities there in Boise. Number four, provide digital resources to members, basically for friendship evangelism. So as you're thinking about outreach, whether it be local or global outreach, sometimes we just think about, well, get stuff out on the web page, get stuff out on Facebook so that people can get to know their Savior. I think the better approach sometimes with especially social networking strategies is provide these resources and get them into the hands of the saints, the ambassadors, for them to use. That's kind of what MLC Day was all about, right? Mm-hmm. Giving them things to share, giving them so that they didn't have to create this by themselves. And I think that goes true. That goes for each congregation in their social media strategies too. Don't just think of, well, people are going to come and look at our Facebook page, so we're going to provide material for them to get to know, you know, Christianity, get to know us. No. Get this stuff in the hands of your members, who then have this larger network than combined than certainly the church would ever have. So that's really the approach I think that is going to net the greatest benefit is if you just get those resources in your members' hands.
You know, Martin, I think it's important to have a catalog per se, or a group of resources, not just here's one thing and we'd like you to share it or whatever. It's allowing them some flexibility and some customization and some ability to pick and choose what's most appropriate. So maybe, you know, in some cases it might be a video versus imagery versus documents, and some people may be more comfortable and have friends to share it with that enjoy one type of resource over another. So having a collection of resources is probably a good idea.
Yep. That kind of goes back to that content inventory. Mm-hmm. I've encouraged some congregations to think about kind of a content calendar. So you can block out when you're going to publish these things. So day of the week, the category, this is devotional, this is informational, this is educational, and try and blend that across the calendar so that you can kind of spread things out and provide, again, a number of different kinds of resources that might be interesting to your members as far as the ability to share.
Very good.
Number five, capture and share stories. Story is really, really important, especially in cross-cultural ministry, because there's that relational aspect. And as you're dealing with family and friends, sharing stories is real powerful versus, hey, I learned about Jesus, rather than, yeah, I learned about Jesus, but this is how it's also impacted my life or my family's life. So I believe that one of the strategies is going to come out of the Boise congregation there is just capture little 5-minute video vignettes of members talking about their faith, or families talking about how Jesus is the center of what they do, and making that available. I think that can be extremely, extremely powerful, rather than, let's say, the pastor just preaching a sermon. Here are the people who've heard that word and whose word, you know, God's word has made a difference in their lives. And that's really easy to do. It doesn't have to be really high tech. It's just, you just need a little bit of video editing and get get somebody on the screen that's just talking from the heart. So capture and share story is really important in, I think, cross-cultural or any kind of outreach.
You know, I'm making a note to myself on paper, by the way, I use my pen here, but I'm making a note to look up a link to our interview with Professor Mark Paustian. You might remember that we talked to him. It's been some years ago now, Martin, but it was about sharing stories and how important that narrative is in reaching out with your faith. And I think that would be a great thing to reference here in that regard.
Number six really has to do with building up members, equipping members so that their faith grows and therefore they want to share it. And that's provide digital resources to members for deeper study. There's many ways to do that. It can be kind of a flip classroom kind of thing or some kind of online coursework. It can be videos. It can be maybe even just videotaping some of your Bible studies. But getting more of your members into God's Word is always going to help your digital outreach. They're going to be more comfortable with their faith. They're going to be more excited about sharing it. They're not going to be as maybe reticent or even scared to broach some topics that I think some people shy away from sharing their faith because, well, I don't know all the answers. So as people get more comfortable in their faith, get more comfortable with their Bibles, they're going to be better evangelists, of course. So providing digital resources to members for deeper study is a really key one.
I can see a side benefit of that just from the fact that they're going to be getting more comfortable with the digital communications and the digital space. So as they see you as congregational leaders model that, delivery mechanism, that digital interaction and things, then they would be able to turn around and use that as they share as well.
Yep, absolutely. Number seven, develop a social media strategy. This is always on the list, regardless of whether it's cross-cultural outreach or not. I think you can't just say, well, we're going to do Facebook or we're going to use Twitter or Instagram, Pinterest, whatever it is. You have to kind of think very methodically about it. Why are you using it? What is it good for? And as I mentioned in one of the earlier tips, important to think of it more as a delivery mechanism to your members, to those people that are already your friends, to then enable them to share that great content. So there again comes into that content schedule concept where you're plotting all your social media avenues and determining when you're sharing, what you're sharing, who the potential ambassadors are for that content. So this is something that should probably be at the top of many congregations' lists. Many congregations have Facebook pages, but I bet they don't all have social media strategies.
Yeah, and you know, being strategic also includes planning for the future. So you have something that's going to be sustained over a period of time. You aren't just, running with a good idea that may, fail eventually or play out or whatever. So
yeah, that yeah. Strategy should include measurements, objectives. You know, how are we doing against what we thought we would do? And that's really important with new technology, especially not just kind of doing it because everybody else is doing it and then just accepting the results. So number eight, understand what websites are and aren't. This is one of my favorites, Sally, because I think a lot of people really don't know what their websites are for or what they're good for. And I believe in today's world, this come and see strategy that websites are isn't really effective, isn't your outreach strategy in and of itself. I believe websites are good resource containers, good maybe information containers, but to get people there, that's really not going to happen just by itself on websites. You need to drive people there, usually now, through social networks. So it's kind of a combo deal with the previous point, developing social media strategies. So your websites become, necessary and containers of resources. Learning materials, other things that could be housed there for perpetuity. But ultimately, if you build it, they're not going to come all by themselves.
Yeah, when I do various talks with folks who are setting up a website, I tell them I like to think of the website as the hub. And all of these different communication channels are the spokes of the wheel. Mm-hmm. And you want to drive people to your website. You want them to be there because you control that. You don't control your Facebook presence or whatever. I mean, it fits in Facebook's confinements and stuff. So you want to get them back to that website where your brand, your identity, your logo, the feel of your congregation, whatever it may be, really shows through clearly, and you have control of that. But you certainly aren't just going to get them to come and look all the time on its own merit. So you need those spokes that kind of fit into the hub. That's the way I like to think.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic between social media and websites now that congregations need to kind of think through. They're not parallel things. There's a different relationship going on. So number nine, develop an engagement strategy. And that kind of plays into what we were just talking about. You really need to figure out that this is not certainly with websites, but also with Facebook. It's not one way. Unless there's a two-way communication, unless there's you talking to them and them talking to you, communication, it really isn't happening. So you have to intentionalize that and figure out how to get the two sides engaged in conversation, in meaningful dialogue about faith. And that's hard. So you need to kind of think about that. So when you put stuff on your webpage, when you create content on Facebook or Twitter, how are people going to respond? And in what way are you going to give them a way to get, you know, that response back to you? So it's no longer just kind of a billboard, send it out mentality. It's got to be two ways.
And, you know, we're talking a lot of strategy here, but there's a lot of technology that goes on behind the scenes to make that happen. So as you say, I want them to have a two-way conversation and I want them to be able to comment and things. Well, exactly how is that going to fit? And who's going to maintain that channel and keep the technology fresh and things like that. So there's a techie side to all of these components, basically.
Right. So that kind of suggests, and what's not even on here are, you know, pay attention to your resources. You really need to do some care and feeding for all this too. So if you're going to maintain a Facebook page, you need somebody obviously there to encourage that engagement, to ask engaging questions, to respond to other posts so that it's not just I'm going to post and then, you know, you guys have at it. There needs to be kind of that two-way street.
I'm liking that care and feeding comment. Maybe Facebook is like a zoo. Some care and feeding going on.
Yeah. Number 10, use a prospect management database. This is what technology is really good at. So as you have this engagement, as your social media strategy nets benefit to you, as people visit your website, you are going to make connections. There's a network that's going to be built, especially in a cross-cultural setting. You're going to have local people. You're going to have domestic people. You're going to have international contacts, and you need a way to track that. The only way to follow up on those or know kind of what the appropriate response would be or programs that need to be put in place to meet those needs is to track those interactions. And that's where a prospect management database comes in. I think everybody realizes this, but the hard part about prospect management databases is once they're set up, you need to maintain them. So again, care and feeding. You need somebody there managing it, who cares about it, who understands how it works, can provide meaningful reports, and needs to be used.
I'm just envisioning all us techies with zookeeper costumes on. I'm just going down to the zoo path. Anyway, lots of care and feeding goes on with the techies.
Requires people. Yeah,
it does. Definitely does.
So those are my little 10 top 10 tips for cross-cultural digital outreach, although they apply, I think, in many cases across the board. So if those are useful to you, awesome. If you have other things that we didn't mention that you think are important, either in cross-cultural settings or just in digital outreach in general, let us know that. We'd love to include those on the list. So go to wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment on one of the show notes there, or the show notes page there, and or send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. Love to hear your feedback on that.
I'd love to hear a follow-up on how the Boise congregation runs with your ideas, Martin. Did they pick just one thing?
They're meeting as a congregation at the end of the month.
Cool.
And they're going to be making some decisions at that point. So let's Excellent. Pray for them. It's an exciting time for them as they're thinking outside of their walls. For many years, they've been the struggling home mission. Now they want to reach out with a more global vision and be maybe a hub for Vietnamese outreach across the Synod. So please pray for them. It'll be neat to watch them grow.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to our next segment of the show, which we call Wells Now.
Yep, and I was just going to try to share my screen now because I have the Synod Convention website up. Just before you know it, folks, it's going to be time for our Synod Convention, our 2015 Synod Convention being held in Saginaw, Michigan at Michigan Lutheran Seminary. The dates are July 27th through 30th, and a huge component of Synod Convention every year is the publishing of the BORAM, the Book of Reports and Memorials.
Yes.
Yep. So folks all over the Synod send in their suggestions, you would call it, memorials, and those get published, as well as all of the areas of the Synod provide reports and things. And a lot of this information is studied in advance of convention so that the delegates come there with a feeling for how their area district conference circuit feels about the different issues that are being decided at Synod Convention. So if you're interested, Synod Convention website will have a link in our show notes. The theme for the convention is One in Christ, and you can scroll down the page and find the BORAM available online as of about a week ago. And you can get the full book in PDF format, download it, read it. I believe it's mailed out to
all call workers.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe mail call workers. I'm not sure.
Yeah, something like that.
I should know it, but I don't.
It is available.
Okay. Yeah, and some would say, you know, that sounds perfectly boring, but it's really not. It has a lot of good stuff in there about what the Synod is doing on your behalf, where you're church congregational mission offering dollars are going, and just a lot of encouraging stuff there about how the Lord is working in his people. So don't have to read the whole thing, but just page through it, see what articles interest you, and that's what we'll be talking about at the Synod Convention.
And there's more Wells Now news, Martin. I don't have a particular screen to share, but from the MLC website and the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary website, over the coming week, you're going to be able to view the streamed graduation and call services that are being held on both campuses. This Friday night will be commencement concerts here at Martin Luther College. Those are always wonderful, and both concerts will be streamed at 4 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. And then on Saturday, the 16th, graduation will be at 10 a.m., call service at 2:30 in the afternoon. And then there's a comparable schedule at the seminary. They have vicar assignments on Tuesday night of next week, and then call service on Thursday morning, I believe at 10 a.m., a concert Thursday evening, and then graduation Friday morning. So lots of wonderful activities, kind of the culmination of our worker training school year and efforts as we, you know, support our students from preschool all the way through those college and seminary graduation events. Very exciting times.
Yeah, very excited young men and women, I'm sure. And if you'd want to know more specifics or where to go, I would think if you go to the home pages of the schools, mlc-wells.edu or wls.wells.net, you will find the schedule there and links to their live broadcast, which is great. We used to do the live streaming, we meaning the Synod. Now the schools all have their own streaming equipment, so what a blessing that has been for them, and for WLS in particular, they'll be doing it for the first time on their own for this season, so blessings on that work.
Definitely.
Shall we move on, Sally, to our of the week? Let's do it. You're up.
All right. My pick this week is a Google Chrome plugin. And you know, Martin,
so is mine.
I bet you're going to say yours is too. I see that in our mind map. I picked mine not knowing that that's what you would pick. I wasn't being a copycat, but you did pick.
Well, you didn't pick the same thing, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Mine is a Firefox plugin too. Is yours?
Oh, no. I don't know the answer to that.
There is one though.
I bet there is. The one I'm featuring today is called Eyedropper. And for those of you that do any image editing, you're familiar with the concept of an eyedropper. There's often that type of tool in various image editors. If you install this Chrome plugin, then you have an eyedropper sitting up on your Chrome main screen plugin area. And when you click the plugin, it brings up an interface. You should see that kind of overlaid on my screen. Actually, I'm going to go over here to this logo and click the plugin. And so the use case of this would be for a web developer who's trying to come up with a palette of colors that are in concert with the logo for the congregation, for instance. And so he might use the eyedropper tool and click the button that says pick the color from the web. And then as I move my mouse, I'm not sure if you're seeing it or not, there's an extra little box along for the ride with my mouse. And as you move over different components of the image, that box will display the color in that area. And when you have the color that you want, a couple of things. If I just rest on a color and you look, well, you can't see it in my screen share, but it displays on the screen. It's just not displaying it because it's an overlay.
I can see it in the bottom right there.
In the bottom right, yes. I can pick up the hexadecimal and the RGB color factor. Or if I click on it, it actually saves it. And I can have a history of all the colors that I've clicked on recently. But when I hover my mouse on it, I see the hexadecimal, the short hex code, the color description, and two different displays. It says HSL and RGB numeric representations of that color. So I could take that information and use it in various areas, especially in a web design, for instance. It's really valuable information to webmasters to have those hex codes to apply in style sheets and things. So, if you are so inclined and wondering about what colors are in different imagery, this works in your Chrome browser and will allow you to pick up those colors with the eyedropper tool. That's yep. What I've got for you.
Works well. I use that in Final Web all the time because you can actually customize the colors of your template, but you have to know the RGB value to do that. So Nice. Nice pick. My Chrome plugin, let me share my screen as well, is something called Scroll to Top. Scroll to Top is a little Chrome extension. It's also, as I mentioned, available on Firefox that kind of takes the pain and suffering out of scrolling long pages. I think with the web now and with mobile, more and more pages are getting longer and longer, and people aren't minding, you know, developing for long scrolls. So what this does is it puts a little icon in the bottom right of your screen, especially one that has more than just a page full of content. And as I scroll down, that arrow, which was pointing down, turns upside down and allows me to click it and scroll all the way back up to the top. So if I'm going way down here, and I'm just trying to find something on the page and think, well, I need to get back to the top. Easy way to do that. Normally, you'd have to kind of scroll all the way back up. So the number of turns of the scroll wheel. Instead, you can just click the blue up arrow and you get scrolled all the way to the top.
Nice.
In addition, you've got, as you scroll down, you notice as you hover over the little up arrow or down arrow, you've got these double arrows that'll take you a page at a time. So you can just go one page at a time, which is kind of handy too if you're just reading content. So sometimes with a scroll wheel, you don't quite get it right. You don't get quite a screen full, and then you have to kind of scroll around to get the line of text you missed. This just does that one page at a time exactly and gives you a nice way to navigate your page. You can click this X here to make this go away if it's covering some content, if you don't want it to appear. But you can go to the bottom also from the top. So if you want to go all the way to the bottom to get a footer item or something. Pages, particularly like Facebook and those kinds of things, where you're just scrolling, that never end. This is a great way to get back up to the top without having to either click and drag the elevator bar or just scroll, 50, 60 times just to get back to the top of the page. So little plug-in, free Hangout on Google Chrome and on Firefox as well.
Excellent. Pretty cool. We will have a link in the show notes to both those plugins. So easy to install in your browser. Just go to the Google Chrome store and click the install button and you'll have them on your browser as well.
Scroll to the top. Very cool. Let's move on to our next segment, which is community feedback.
Yeah, this week I got an email, Martin, from Benjamin Springer. He said, I've been called to serve as the 5th and 6th grade teacher and technology coordinator at St. Paul's in Exonia, Wisconsin. I have a question about Google Apps for Education. I thought you might be able to answer. He noticed the education upgrade is available for formally accredited schools. Exonia will be starting the accreditation process within the next few months. Will we qualify for Google Apps for Education? Is there a way to register, in advance of us actually receiving the accreditation? Thought it was a great email. Ben ended it by saying thank you for your work with WellsTech as well. So that's a listener that we have out there that we weren't aware of. So that's nice to know. I unfortunately don't necessarily have an answer for this. I was actually kind of surprised to see it spelled out so plainly that K-12 or higher educational institutions that are not for profit and formally accredited can sign up for Google Apps for Education for free. So I know that there are a lot of schools that are using Google Apps, and I would guess some of them have not yet been through an accreditation process. I will say that Google Apps for nonprofits could be obtained through your church affiliation. So that's another route to go to get the Google Apps suite of tools. But my best recommendation for Benjamin was to join the Wells Google Schools group and ask questions there, because I think it's probably at least 170 strong currently, and it's a very active Google community. I don't have it up on my screen, I should, but it's run by Dave Tess and Jason Schmidt, and just constantly exchanging good information out there in Wells Google Schools. So if you're a Chromebook school, if you're using Google Apps for Education, it's a great place to go to ask and find answers to questions. So that would be my recommendation, because I'm sure there's people out there that have lived through the very thing you're living through, Benjamin. So
I'm sure there's got to be a viewer or a listener who knows the exact answer to this question, because we have a lot of teachers out there who have Google Apps in place in their schools. So whether that's the nonprofit variety or the education variety, I wonder if they would care to share. So please share that with us, and then we can pass that along and answer Benjamin's question.
One more thing to mention, I guess I'll take claim of this one. This is community feedback courtesy of Sally Draper. I just got a CNN breaking news email a little earlier today that there was a new research effort out from Pew Research Center, and found the article on the Pew site. We'll link to it in our show notes. The headline says, America's Changing Religious Landscape, Christians Decline Sharply as Share of Population, Unaffiliated and Other Faiths Continue to Grow. And they have one chart on here that kind of summarizes things. It breaks down the different types of religion, and what they call evangelical Protestants are down almost 1%, Catholics down 3%, mainline Protestants down 3.4%, and unaffiliated up 6.7%. So that's a pretty dramatic decrease in those who would say that they were affiliated with a Christian denomination, about a 7% overall. And in like fashion, the unaffiliated went up. The survey goes further to break down and show that millennials, the younger people, the younger generation, are the ones who have left most strongly from organized religions and are calling themselves unaffiliated. So a definite sharp decline, 7%. I think this was over 7 years. I saw the dates, 2007 to 2014 are the two time periods that they're contrasting. So
definitely something to pray about, huh?
Sad stuff. Yeah.
Certainly the church needs to be aware of that. And obviously put some ministry plans in place to take affirmative steps toward improving that.
Yeah, we definitely want the millennials in heaven with us, and we want them to hear the good news and to come to faith. That would be really important segment of our population that we want to address.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to ministry resources?
Yeah, let's do that. I told you I bragged earlier, Martin, that I didn't have many tabs open. And I think I know why now, because I didn't have the one open that I wanted open for this segment of the show. So give me a second to get my screen shared. What we're going to talk about here and link to on our ministry resources page is the archive of Google's Education on Air event, which was held last Friday and Saturday, May 8th and 9th. Martin, I'm not sure if you sat in on any of the sessions, but I managed to sit in on about an hour and a half on Friday. Didn't make it to any of the Saturday sessions.
Yeah, I was on my way to Boise, unfortunately, but I was I had seen the reminder early last week and was excited that this was going to be made available even in an archive fashion.
Yeah, I'll say, first of all, the live streaming was really awesome. I saw several people questioning whether the format was, you know, copyable, whether other people could do similar types of events using their same methodologies. And Google responded, no, this is just for our event that we're using this method. So day one was more keynotes and big discussion topics. And I listened a little at the very beginning to the keynotes. They had somebody, they had representatives from all over the world, including a high school student from England involved in that initial discussion round at the very beginning of the day. Later in the day, I listened to something called Transforming Learning with Technology, and it had three representatives of different schools that had gone kind of all in with the Google Apps for Education platform. And, you know, on a district level, large schools, things like that, and just some really exciting results there. And I think the same would be true if you listen to any of these initial day one events, just some really exciting results. Day two was structured a little differently. They had a large number of events going on all throughout the day, like sun up to sundown around the world. And interestingly, they've archived it organized for educators, administrators, IT, and anyone. And then they further subdivided that by theme, by grade level, and then by product. So
yeah, that's a great organization.
You can really drill down. So if you're early elementary or upper elementary and you want to get to something about Google Classroom or our forms or whatever it may be, you can jump right to the information and the events that were held there. And then when you click on one, for instance, Getting Geeky with Google Forms and Scripts, then you can click to watch the recording, access session materials, copy the link to share the session, that kind of thing. So it's very well organized and just tons and tons of resources out here. There was a little discussion over on Wells Google Schools, and Rachel Feld commented that she liked a couple of sessions, one called "And You Thought You Knew Everything About Forms." And I might just have to go watch that one because I have a lot of knowledge about forms, but I bet there's more I can learn. And another one she referenced was called "Set Your Sights on Sites," about Google Sites. And both of those are kind of near and dear to my heart. So I'd love to see what other people are doing with them, how they're using them to enhance education. So those are just a couple. There's a ton of resources out here. And so definitely check out the site, drill down to areas that fit your needs, and perhaps you'll find some helpful professional development resources.
Very nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Next week, we're going to do this all over again, and we're going to be talking about church office apps. So what are those things? What are those available websites, tools, apps that are going to make your church office more efficient, maybe communicate a little bit better? And we won't be alone, Sally, will we?
No, that's right. We are having Pastor Emil Burgess from Trinity in Caledonia, Wisconsin, join us. Emil is one of our presenters at Wells Tech Conference, which we haven't talked about yet today, Martin.
Nice segue.
Wells Tech Conference coming up July 9th through 11th there in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Emil will be there. You'll want to come meet him. He's a great guy, and he's going to be presenting on two different topics, Evernote and MailChimp, both of which can make your office run a lot smoother. So we're looking forward to having Emil join us at the top of the show next week.
Very nice. And we thank him in advance for joining us. Featured video, we have one this week.
We do. It is a music video from our friends at Koine. And I don't know how I missed this one, but it's very, very popular on their playlist and things. The title of it is Precious Lord, Take My Hand. And it looks to be a really cool video, kind of done with a cartoon kind of look to it. So it's one that I haven't experienced before. We'll definitely have it embedded on our show notes page, and you'll be able to link to it as well if you want to add it to your playlist. Right. You know, those playlists are getting pretty hefty there. A real valuable ministry resource if you're looking for some digital content, perhaps to share on your social media channels or whatever it may be. You can check out the Wells Tech playlist, as we have built those up over the years now and are happy to have some resources there for you to tap into.
Yeah. Speaking of Koine and their lead singer, Brian Davison, that reminds me that he will be singing the national anthem at the Wells Night at the Brewers game coming up this summer. So if you're in the area and want to see President Schrader attempt to throw out the first pitch, he's self-proclaimed he's not setting the bar very high. He's hoping he gets it to the home plate. Yeah. And then Brian Davison from Koine will be singing the national anthem. So
that's very
Wells special. All around. That's pretty cool.
That is, definitely.
I mentioned that in a previous show. I don't remember the date off of hand, but
about mid-August.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
So. Yeah. So, Martin, just before we go, I just want to, again, plug the Wells Tech Conference. Our time is running out for a couple of things. We have a raffle going on, so you can win a $25 Amazon gift card. We're going to be choosing a winner next week for that. So check out the website for details on that.
And you don't need to actually come to the conference, although we'd love to have you. You can still enter this raffle. So we just want you to share the good news that this conference is going on, and in the process, you might win a $25 gift card.
And we really do want you to get registered for Wells Tech Conference, as our deadline is June 1st. It's rapidly approaching. We want to count you in. And so head over to wells.net/Wells Tech Conference. Come join Martin and I for the 400th Wells Tech podcast. We'll be doing that live on Thursday afternoon, I believe.
Yeah, just a little add-on to that news is we recently opened up one of our pre-conference workshops that if for some reason you can't attend the whole conference but just want to attend our session, our half day on Logos, Pastor Aaron Fry is going to be leading that session on Logos, which is a popular pastor's office tool, basically, but anybody can really use it for in-depth Bible study of the original languages, commentaries, those kinds of things. That is on the 9th, the afternoon of the 9th, and if you go to wells.net/wells.con, if you can see the Logos logo there on the homepage, click on that and you'll see how to sign up just for that for the price of $49. Or if you are a student at MLC or Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary or WLC or Bethany, $29 is all it will cost you for a full half day of some good Logos training.
Very good.
Sal, are we done?
I think we can call it quits for today.
I think you told me at the beginning of the show, boy, this is going to be a short show today. 50 minutes later, not so much. Thank you all for your patience, and we're really glad that you tuned in. Bring your friends next time, and that next time will be Tuesday afternoon, 4 o'clock. Us and Neil. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you.